Hi, my name is Monica Fallon.
And this is Matthew Fabian.
And we are going to talk a little bit about the privacy paradox because we listen to the podcast. So the first question that we want to talk about is, what exactly is the privacy paradox and why is it such a hot topic today? So privacy paradox would be the fact that we love the convenience of living online, but we don't like not having control over our digital privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things online that can become really easy where you click once and it enters all your personal information to buy the latest gadget on Amazon or to fill out all your username and password information for a website. And that's giving you a lot of convenience, but it may be at the expense of your privacy, where those sites that are storing that information may not have the best security, or they may not have your personal interests in mind in terms of keeping that information only for themselves, only for the uses that you need. There may be situations where that information or your interests or activities or what you do online is sold to other companies, is used in advertising, and where that information that you use originally because it's convenient is then given out in ways that you may not find as convenient or as useful in what you're looking to do.
Yeah, that's all really definitely true. And I think today it's becoming like a big issue because I think people are starting to realize that this is happening. Like, the technology transformations that have happened over the years have been so fast, and I feel like we're starting to realize that all this information we'd be giving away is like not stored how we thought it was, or we didn't even know what was happening to it. And people are starting to care and question why we give our data up and whether or not we should be protecting it and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's definitely a hot topic, and I think some people are becoming able to notice it more and more with Googling something, and then a few minutes later you're on Facebook and you see an advertisement for what you just Googled. And even though those are two completely different companies, you know that data is being transferred and stored and given away somewhere in order to try to sell that product to you, sell whatever that is. And that people don't like that. People don't want that in their lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. So the second question we want to address is the challenges that we had to do for these podcasts. So we listened to the podcast every day and they gave us a short little challenge, and they basically challenged us to see what we know about how our data is being used and our privacy. And so we're just going to talk about those and what we learned about ourselves and what was surprising, interesting, and possibly frightening. So day one, the podcast was called What Your Phone Knows. And the challenge was to check what apps get your location. So, Matt, how did that end up working out for you?
Yeah, so I went through on my phone and looked at all the different location services. And the first thing I did was notice that there were a lot of apps that I had that it made sense for them to be using my location, like Uber or Facebook. But I had it set to always be able to access the location. I changed that to only being able to use it when it's in the app because at that point, when it's in the app, it's useful for me, it's convenient. But when it's outside of the app, not only can they be using it for purposes that I don't necessarily want or need, but it's also draining battery, it's taking up what I don't necessarily need on my phone. There were a few on there, and I don't remember exactly which ones, that I was looking at, like, there's no reason for you to need my location in the first place. I was able to turn that off. And I know, for example, I was in China 2 weeks ago, and to communicate in China, we needed to download an app called WeChat. And when I downloaded that, it asked for every single permission that I knew was available and then some on the phone, because they track everything. A lot of it's given to the Chinese government. And so that was something that I really tried to lock down as much as possible. But even then, as soon as we got back, I tried to get everything off the app and then delete it so that it wasn't taking any sort of data or information, metadata that I didn't want it to have about myself from my phone.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I had a pretty similar experience with my phone. I was actually pretty happy with myself. I felt like I didn't give my location away too much, but there were some that had my information always, and I wanted to switch it to only when using the app. And some of them, like Snapchat, I let it use my location, but I'm just not willing to give that up. That's just something that, I enjoy, and it's worth it for me. But yeah, I checked in, my Huntington bank account said that they wanted to use my location. I was like, you have no need for my location. Sure. So I was like, yeah, we're turning you off. But yeah, it was a little, I felt pretty good. It was a little frightening, but I mean, it makes sense sometimes for location to be necessary, so.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything I saw that was super frightening. Like, at the end of the day, there are limited locations and or limited access points that apps have from your phone. I think some of the other things we'll be getting into might be a little bit more concerning or frightening as we go forward with this podcast. But overall, I think we were able to find a couple things to lock down, and we didn't find anything too out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I agree. So that one wasn't too bad. All right, so day two was called the Search for Your Identity. And what we were supposed to do is visit panopticclick.eff.org and test, basically, our security. And so, personally, I had actually already done this. I was in a class this semester that I dropped. That was an information security class. And my professor was very into, like, having us check all these things. So he had us do it in class. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I did it, which was a few months ago, I came up with, like, all red X's, like, I just didn't have, like, ad blockers, and, like, I was being followed, and I was a very unique device. So I went, that time I went through and, like, got an ad blocker. I got, I think it's called Privacy Badger, that, like, checks to see what's going on in my browser, and it will, like, turn off, here it is. It'll, like, turn off trackers that are trying to track me, and it, like, tells you what it turned off or what it's leaving on. So, but there's, I still can't seem to get rid of, what is it, fingerprinting?
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to be very limited ways to get rid of having a unique fingerprint. I guess, like, the only option that I saw was to switch to Tor, and I'm not willing to do that right now in my life. So when I did it this time, like, my results were this, like, the same. They were better because I had updated them a few months ago, but I was glad to see that everything was still in check.
That's interesting, because for me, I think it was almost the opposite experience with you.
Really?
Probably for the past several years, I had been using an ad blocker just for the convenience of being able to browse things, go on YouTube and just listen to videos, listen to music ad-free, and not have to worry about annoying pop-ups and everything like that. And with the readings we had a week or two ago about ad blockers and their ethical use in relationship with whether or not they're good or bad for websites, I decided to uninstall my ad blocker. And it's been definitely annoying at times where I've been, you know, I'll sit through 15 seconds of advertising on YouTube before getting to the content that I want, but it's also, you know, actually giving back to the content provider, so I don't feel like the annoyance is too much where I want to go back and get the ad blocker. But a side effect of that is I'm going through this table now from Panopticlick, and everything is red X's. I'm not blocking ads. I'm not blocking trackers. I'm not blocking anything. There's a unique fingerprint. And so that's something I'm planning on looking into a little bit. Maybe see if there's a way to still have those advertisements and, you know, give revenue back, you know, the minuscule revenue that might be, to content providers while getting rid of the any sort of tracking. There's a big blue button saying install Privacy Badger, and I didn't do that yet, but I might consider that. I just kind of in general have a, I'm wary of having just too many extensions on my browser that slow things down and make the pages load even slower in the first place, because you know, at the end of the day, if the tracking is being used mainly for, you know, advertisements and that kind of thing, I don't really click on those advertisements, and this may be a naive opinion, but I don't see a huge concern with a lot of that tracking. Also with day two, though, I did install the extension about what Facebook thinks you like that they mentioned, and there's, you know, 50,000 different categories that they can put you in based on posts you've liked, advertisements you've clicked on, everything like that. And so I went through, and there were, I think, over 100 different categories that Facebook put me in, mostly based on either pages that I had liked or based on advertisements I had ever clicked on. And I went through, and there wasn't really anything that stood out to me, no categories that are like, you know, you hate this certain group or you're really a fan of this. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that about myself. But it was kind of a little bit concerning to see all of those different interests, all the things that I like, all the things that I've interacted with, you know, over the past years, all put together in one place, in one, almost like a complete profile, where someone could go through that, see the 131 items, and get a really good idea of, you know, who I am, have a lot of things to talk about when they just start talking to me, and how that can maybe impact things like advertisements that I see, and the fact that they become more and more targeted to the point where, you know, every ad you go by, you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. That's exactly what they're trying to do, and maybe talk about the ethical implications of that, whether or not getting all your data like that to look at what you're interested in, and then having such targeted ads is a good thing or a bad thing. Personally, I feel like if it's just Facebook looking at the data that you give them and then using that to serve you ads, I'm totally fine with that, because that's the data you're giving to Facebook in exchange for the convenience of having Facebook Messenger, and in exchange for having them auto-tag your pictures with your location and be able to find your friend's face and be able to, you know, give you ads that sometimes are interesting and that you're actually, you know, something that you would like. Where I kind of personally would draw the line with this is where Google is selling their data to Facebook, or vice versa, or where Facebook is able to put little widgets on hundreds and hundreds of different websites that grab the data from those websites too when you're visiting them. And I feel like that kind of goes beyond the line of grabbing data that's kind of mutually beneficial to getting data that's just benefiting Facebook and not benefiting yourself.
Yeah, that's definitely a big question I think we've talked a lot about in class, and like was very weird to hear on the podcast that there's over 50,000 categories. Like, basically, like, anything, like, the most specific things you can think of, they have a category for. And I think that, like, as I've gone on in this class, I've gotten a little more cynical with what Facebook and other big companies are doing with my data. Just because, like, I came into this class very uninformed about, like, what was going on with my data, and just a very regular user. And, like, now I feel like that I know this, I should be doing something about it and not just, like, not caring. And I think my problem with Facebook, and this, like, we'll come to later, was, like, I don't know what they're doing with my data because their terms and conditions are way too long and I'm not going to read them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, a huge problem on the internet, is that no one is going to read terms and conditions. Like, even one of the guys on the podcast, like, he was like, don't even try to read terms and conditions. Like, you're never going to get through it. So, like, but apparently there's, like, websites you can give the terms and conditions too, and they'll condense it for you. But, like, nobody knows that, and nobody thinks it's a big deal to worry about terms and conditions. But, like, I'm sure Facebook has slipped stuff in that, like, lets them have way more of my data than I would have anticipated. Mm-hmm. So I'm still working on that, but I do understand, like, the fact that I'm using Facebook as a free service, like, I am giving up some of my data. But I don't know. It's still a big issue.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, moving on to day 3, the podcast was called Something to Hide, and the challenge was to go to applymagicsauce.com, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what this was. Would you mind filling him in?
Sure. So, with this one, you're able to connect with either Facebook or Twitter, or I think even a just a source of text that you've written, and then the applymagicsauce.com API is able to make lots of predictions about yourself, about you, your gender, as I'm going through here, parts of your personality, intelligence, satisfaction with life, leadership potential, sexual preference, political orientation, religious orientation, education, relationship status, age, all based on just information that you're putting out there that anyone can access from Facebook or Twitter. And so I went through, I connected with my Facebook and found, now I don't post much on Facebook in the first place. It is very, very rare for me to post, and I'll like things occasionally, but in general I try not to put too much of myself out on Facebook. I try to have more of my interactions with people be in person, and something that I find to be more meaningful. So the results I found were hit or miss. Found that I was male. Some of the personality traits I thought were pretty accurate. Said I had below average intelligence, but above average life satisfaction. And then, political orientation, religious orientation, it didn't really know what to do with me. Same thing with relationship status and education. So, I mean, I think, at least for me personally, I wasn't doing a good enough job of giving Facebook and giving everyone enough data to make those conclusions, which I guess is a good thing. But it's interesting to see things like these likes make you appear to be married versus these make you appear to not be married versus in a relationship and so on. So they're able to look at different sets of data and see what percentage of people are married and like the NFL versus what percentage of people are less interested in history and like the Buffalo Sabres or whatever. So it is interesting to see how all this big data can be applied to create a accurate or not so accurate version of somebody.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. It was definitely a little hit or miss. They thought that I was 30, which I don't really know what that says about me, but you know, I'm not, so. But yeah, they got that I was female. They said that I had a 52% leadership potential. But I think the most interesting thing was that they gave me the Jungian personality type. So, like, they called me introverted, sensing, thinking, judging. And I had been, like, trying to do this for, I've, like, been trying to do this for a long time. Like, I don't seem to fit the categories. And when I read this, I was like, that sounds a lot like me. So the fact that, like, I couldn't even do that, but they did that after looking at my Facebook was a little scary.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I also don't post on Facebook that much. It's more, like, people tagging me and things. So that's probably why they were off on, like, my age and stuff. But, yeah, it was – I'm glad that they got my age wrong. I just feel like that was a little bit of a comforting thing. But, yeah, it was a little weird, but – it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, I guess.
Sure. I think what is a little bit scary, though, is that these predictions are based solely on posts and likes. But if you were to make this more complicated, if you were to look in and see what information do you put to be publicly available. So some people have their age and birthday just readily available for anyone to see. Or maybe you don't have your age, but you're friends with a large percentage of people that do have their age. So then you're able to make judgments based on their age, what your age is, and maybe you're being private, but your friends aren't, and you're able to draw a more complete picture of who you are from that. So I think there is a lot of information that can be pulled away from what you post on Facebook, what you tweet, what you put up on Snapchat or Instagram that you don't realize, your friends don't realize, but it's only when kind of taking all that data together and analyzing it, you can get this more complete picture.
Yeah, and like I feel like I wouldn't even realize that anybody cared. Like, that anyone was specifically looking at my data and, like, trying to target ads towards me. Like, it's a lot easier to think, like, oh, Facebook's taking in everybody's data, which they are, but, like, they're still using it to target things for you and for your friends. So that makes it a little bit more real, I feel. But, yeah. All right, should we move to day four? So day four was really interesting. It was called 15 Minutes of Anonymity. I hate that word. So the challenge was to be alone for 15 minutes without, like, any access to the internet, like, no connection, basically, to the outside world. And, yeah, do you want to talk about your experience with that?
Sure. I actually, this was a very convenient challenge because on Tuesdays I do Adoration in Como for half an hour. So I take 30 minutes a week to just really be away from the pressures of constantly being connected and, you know, checked in and not to get into the religious or theological part of it with this podcast, but being able to be away from always having a connection to whether it's text messages or emails or people who want to get access to you, make requests on your time, on what your schedule is, what you want to be doing. It's really nice to be able to just let everything off of your shoulders and be anonymous and be just who you are and really kind of work on that self-identity instead of working on the identity that's created by other people. So I like having that alone time, like you were talking about the four-character personality test, like ISTJ or whatever, and I'm definitely more introverted where I like to recharge by myself. So those 15 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever are always really helpful, I think, in that.
Yeah. I love this challenge. I was so excited when they said this, because I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, I have to stop doing stuff for 15 minutes. It's an assignment. Was in my room when I was listening to the podcast, so I shut my computer, I turned off my phone, and then I, like, went into the other room, just where my bed was, and I, like, laid on my bed on the top bunk and just, like, looked out the window, and it was really nice. I will admit, I did start to fall asleep, and I took a nap after that, but, it was cool to, like, just take a minute and, not be worried about what's going on my phone. But I will say I definitely thought the time was going a lot slower. I thought it had definitely been 15 minutes, if not 20, and I looked at my watch and it was 10. And I was kind of like disappointed in myself. I was like, it's only 15 minutes. Like, you should be able to do this, no problem. And then I was also a little disappointed in myself when I, like, I actually took a nap after that, so it was a little longer than 15 minutes, but when I woke up from my nap, I, like, immediately went and turned on my phone and, like, checked everything, and, I mean, I could say it was because, like, oh, I can't miss, like, certain texts or whatever, but it's honestly more because, like, our phones and our laptops are just, like, such an integral part of our lives. Like, I remember I didn't get an iPhone until, I think, 10th grade in high school, and I didn't want one for a really long time because, like, I'd seen my brother get one, and I was like, oh my gosh, that kid is always looking at his phone, and I don't want to be like that, and I was really, really worried that when I got an iPhone, I would be like that, and it took some time, but I think I've definitely become a regular iPhone user, that when they're in an uncomfortable situation, they go on their phone, or just, like, when they're bored, they go on their phone, and I, like, sleep with my phone under my pillow because that's what my alarm is on, and, like, it's crazy because, like, I'm really never disconnected. Like, even if I wake up in the middle of the night, like, I will check my phone. Like, it's, so that was, like, more something, not even, like, society, but just, like, me, myself, realizing that, like, yeah, this is, like, something that I'm addicted to, but, like, society sees it as okay, so.
Yeah, I think that's something that was mentioned in maybe the first podcast about how if the government said everyone had to carry around a tracking device, people would rebel. But instead, we give everyone iPhones, and they carry around the tracking device and pay for it every month.
Yeah. That was very interesting to hear.
It's good to be able to be disconnected sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. That's like, I did, what was it called? Sorry, Appalachia. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, very limited service, and I loved that, because it was, like, a week where we were just, like, all together and, like, you'd only check your phone if you're, like, seeing when, you, like, the time was, so you, like, move on to the next activity. But, like, no one was worrying about what was going on anywhere else. And, like, that feeling of being present was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, day 5. This one was called Your Personal Terms of Service. And the challenge was to write your own terms of service, which was a little tricky, I would say. I did kind of a half-hearted job, but basically my terms of service were that, like, I should have the ability to know what my data is being used for, and then if I'm not comfortable with it, I should either not use the site or find the best way to, like, make myself more comfortable. So if that's, like, not, I don't really know, like, not using a certain part of a website or, like, trying to, like, limit permissions as much as possible. But I found this one challenging just because I feel like we've already given so much control to all these websites, and, like, it's going to be really hard to take it back, especially just as, like, one person. Mm-hmm. So this one, I think, was the one that was, like, most challenging for me.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of just almost status quo bias in the world in general, and specifically with technology privacy trade-offs. Yeah, so I think in general, if people are already trading their, you know, their privacy, their security for convenience in something, then other people are more likely to just go along with what that is, and you know, if everyone else does it, why not just follow along with those terms of service? Because millions of people do that. So I think for me, that the personal terms of service that I try to follow and that I'm gonna consciously try to follow moving forward is that when I give my personal information, or when I give any sort of data to a website, to a company, to an application, in order to increase my convenience and increase my usability of that service, I want to consciously make the decision that giving up that privacy is worth the convenience that it brings. So part of that is knowing exactly how much privacy I'm giving up. And that can be difficult sometimes. I know, like, if you're, you know, going on Facebook and then you're giving them access to your location and your contact list and then all the information that you post on Facebook, that information is going a lot of different places. So there's a lot of convenience, but there's also a lot of privacy that you're giving up. And that's the trade-off that I really want to be able to think about and make a conscious decision.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think I was thinking about that recently. Like, I don't have to be someone that, like, completely goes off the internet or, like, does all these, like, the most intense version of, like, keeping your data privacy. Like, that's a lot of work. But I can be more conscious. Like, I don't have to be someone that just, like, goes. Like, I feel like the fact that I have this knowledge is, like, the, like, now I actually have the power, like, more power than a lot of people do to, like, choose what I want to do and, like, recognize, like, yeah, this might be an inconvenience at some point, but, like, it's worth it for me to have my data protected, or this is a convenience that I really want, so I'm willing to give this up.
Mm-hmm.
And then something I just, like, wanted to mention about the fifth podcast was I was really intrigued by that the creator of the World Wide Web was there. And that he thought that we should completely change the internet and thought that it was possible. So, like, to recap that, he thought that every user should basically have, like, a bank of information about themselves, the username and password, and you would only give information to services for a certain amount of time and under your terms, and they would have to ask your permission. So if, like, someone wanted to check your credit score when you're applying for a credit card, they would have access to it for 7 days,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't be able to share it or whatever, anything like that. And it honestly sounds like a crazy idea just based on, like, how the internet is now. But a part of me thinks, like, I mean, it could be that way. Do you agree, or...?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge... It's a paradigm shift from what we have now with Equifax, just, you know, leaking everyone's, not leaking, but losing everyone's data, and, you know, we're just going on living our lives, and for most people that doesn't really change anything other than the fact that, you know, for the next every year of your life you could have your identity stolen or a million other things from that breach. It would be something that you'd have to have, I think, a big enough catalyst to switch from the paradigm we have now, where companies take your data, to have some sort of big event happen, similar to, I think, the Equifax breach, where people are like, no, enough is enough. We have to take back control of who we are, what we share, and then switch to the model that he was explaining. And I think that's something that's difficult, and I don't know if that's something that will happen, but I think it would be a better model for the individual if that were able to take place.
Yeah, I obviously there has to be a huge shift in the mindset of people, and I think that a lot of people just don't know, and that's, like, a very common theme. And, like, I think it's especially important for me, like, not being a CS major, like, coming into this class, like, not behind, but just not having the same knowledge that you guys do. Like, I was telling my friend at dinner today, like, I think that this class should be an option for, like, all students throughout all majors, because you don't have to have any coding knowledge to do this. Like, the stuff that we're learning is so relevant today and is extremely important, and you can still, like, talk, I mean, it's all about ethics, but, like, in the most relevant way possible. And I just don't think we have enough opportunities to be teaching people these things, or people don't know that they need to be taught. Like, I didn't know that I need to learn this stuff, so unless, like, we start sharing this information and getting people to listen and realizing that, like, the Equifax thing, it's not something that just happens. Like, it's not just, like, something we have to accept. Like, we can change that, which is, it's empowering. It's a cool idea to know that, like, we could eventually have this power if we work on it enough. But it's kind of daunting, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point.
So let's quickly address these last few questions. So I think we've already talked about them a lot, but we'll give a quick summary. So did any of these challenges change the way you think about privacy? Is privacy important to you? Explain why or why not. I'm going to start with this.
Sure. So I don't know if any of the challenges fundamentally changed what I think about privacy or how I value it. I did get a better idea of exactly how much information, how much data I'm sharing. And it's something that when I took the privacy personality survey, it came up as a realist, where I think about privacy, but I choose convenience over hardline principle. And I think that holds true with what I found when going through each of these challenges, where privacy is something that's on my mind, and it's something that I think about as I choose whether or not to use certain services. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of things that I'll sacrifice parts of my privacy for in exchange for the service that I get. And I do think privacy is important, and especially if not just in the sense of I don't want Facebook to be able to advertise to me very specific things, but in the sense of, you know, I don't necessarily want my current employer to know that I'm job hunting, or, you know, I don't want certain aspects of myself to be available to my boss for information about, you know, promotion or being laid off or anything like that. So I think at this point in time, maybe I don't value privacy as much as I should. But I have the steps now from going through these challenges to address a few of those issues where I may be more glaring. For example, where my web browser is just free and open for the whole world to see.
Yep.
And I can address that moving forwards in the future.
Yeah. I think for me, these challenges did make me think more about privacy. And I think it's been a part of this whole class, but like, it was cool to focus on it. So when I took the test, I took one before I started a challenge and one after. And so before I was a realist, the same idea, but after I was apparently a believer, which was like, you feel like there's things to change and you want to change them. And I don't want to go as far as to say, like, I'm going to, like, I don't think I'm going to do anything crazy in the way, like, I use the internet. But I think I got a little mad about the way that the internet worked, and hearing that things could be different. So I think privacy is important to me. And I think I didn't realize how important it was until recently. But just, like, I don't know, it's just something that every human has the right to. And I guess I'm just, like, giving it up too easily. I don't know. It's been, like, an interesting question, because, like, the question of convenience is there too, but that's the next question. But, yeah, I think this has made me more, definitely more aware, and, yeah, a little bit more angry, actually, just just about how things are. But, yeah. So then the last thing we want to do is discuss the trade-offs between privacy and living in the connected world. Can there ever be a balance, and do you want one?
I guess my final thoughts on this are along the lines of the fact you hear that if you're using a service and you're not paying for it, you're not the customer, you're the product, you're the thing that's being sold, your data, your whatever. And that's true with, you know, things like Facebook and Twitter and all the different social media that we use. And there's always going to be that trade-off between being able to use these services where you are the product, and you know, having the privacy of not having your data being shared and used by those companies. So I guess on the topic of if there could be a balance and if you want one, I think one solution that could be put in place here is allowing users the opportunity to opt out. And there's gonna be issues here, but there was an article I read a few months ago about how all of the data that Facebook has on you and sells and gains and basically all the money that you make Facebook, a single account amounts to $12. So if a user was given the option between being able to sacrifice your privacy and use Facebook for free, or if you're more privacy conscientious, you can pay a one-time fee of, say, $12 and then be able to use Facebook with that opt-out in place. Where your information is not being used, and instead of being the product, you're now the customer because you're paying for the service, and you're not giving your privacy, you're giving your money. Where that might be a balance that could be put in place that would help protect people's privacy who are interested in protecting their privacy.
Huh, that is a really cool idea. I never thought about that. Yeah, I don't know if something like that would happen. I feel like Facebook really loves its data, but that's a really cool idea. So yeah, the trade-off is definitely something that I think all of us are dealing with. And I think that there can be a balance, but that the balance is different for everybody. Like the person who ran the podcast was saying, like, where you draw the line may be different from where I draw the line. And I think that's, like, that's part of a freedom, is we can choose to draw the line at different places. Or we should have that ability to decide how much you want to give. But, yeah, I definitely want to balance, because there's some things about the convenience of using Google that I don't think I would want to give up. But there are also some things that scare me. So I think this is definitely something that I'm going to have to keep thinking about. And I think we'll probably discuss it more as the semester goes on. But, yeah, I think balance is important, and you're never going to be able to have complete privacy or complete connection. So that's that.
All right.
I think we're done.